So, having completed the master's degree in narrative medicine, one of the biggest questions that I faced, both from myself and from my classmates and professors and peers, was how are you planning to bring your narrative medicine training back to your medical profession? And I didn't really have a good answer for them, or for myself. And so I came to find that a good way to explain myself was that, well, it's an ongoing process. It's an open question. It's something I'm still working on. I think I'll really have to get back to, working in the hospital, working in the clinic, and see what evolves. And this satisfied most of the people who asked, but wasn't entirely satisfying to me, to be honest. And I felt often like I didn't have a good answer, and this was really just a stopgap to get people to stop asking until I could figure it out. As I came back and started rotating in the hospital again, I kept a notebook and started jotting down some of the things that were pertinent to the question of how does narrative medicine play a role in my career, my training, and medicine more broadly. And this helped. I feel like in a lot of ways, narrative medicine has to justify itself and justify its existence, justify its importance, justify its relevance to modern medicine. And as someone who is now a stakeholder in narrative medicine and who firmly believes that narrative medicine is a worthwhile enterprise, I feel sort of personally responsible for figuring out how I can bring it to a medical world that is often, if not outright scornful, at least very skeptical of efforts to humanize or to bring the humanities to medical training. I was in a conference on, I believe it was a cardiology conference, and there was a slide presentation being given on PowerPoint, and it included some data from patients who had had certain tests done. And the slide was a spreadsheet with a couple columns of numbers. And of course, everything was de-identified and appropriately marked and labeled. And the presenter kept gesturing to the slide and referring to the patient. And I think unconsciously, but in a very real way, the patient had become this column of numbers. And as this was being presented, the doctors in the audience were sort of commenting and saying, oh, wow, this is what beautiful test results, and look at the change and everything. And it really struck me how much the patient, as a construct, for them in that moment, was purely a column of numbers. Any doctor you ask will tell you that it's wrong to think of a patient as numbers, that we've moved past that, that it's important to see the person. But in reality, I'm finding that for all the talk about doing so, it's not often actually practiced. So it really struck me that at that moment, how difficult it is, in a way, to practice narratively. And how difficult it might be to bring narrative practice to other physicians who maybe haven't been trained that way and maybe don't see the necessity of training that way. And fortunately, this was not a case where some harm was brought to a patient because they weren't seen as a person. In fact, the patient wasn't even present in the room. This was just a bunch of doctors talking about a set of abstract numbers. It inspired me to think about sort of the patient as a constellation of many different aspects. And I suspect I'm going to mix metaphors here quite a bit, so fair warning. But the construct of what a patient is comprised of all these different facets. And the numbers in that column are indeed one facet of the patient and can be sort of used as synecdoche, I guess, for the patient. But there are so many other, in fact, you could argue infinitely more facets of every patient. And different practitioners in different specialties look at different facets of this patient by sort of looking through different lenses at the patient. What narrative medicine does is it looks at certain facets that other specialties don't. This is for sure not something I would feel comfortable bringing up to the person who ran the conference or even to, you know, one of my senior residents or fellows who was supervising me in the hospital, because it would be seen as highly critical and it's not my place as a medical student to bring those concerns to anyone. I try to talk to my peers. I try to spread the word on my level. And I also, you know, I'm interested in doing research, finding data that can support my assertions. Because no matter how lowly you may be, if you're able to muster actual numbers to support you, or if you're able to present findings at a conference or in a journal, then even people who are above you in the hierarchy are going to have to sit up and pay attention. I was walking down Broadway, actually, after eating dinner, and I heard someone shouting behind me, "Doc, Doc, hey, Doc, Doc." And I figured, I'm not a doctor. This person is not calling to me. There are a lot of doctors around here. It must be someone else. And I ignored it. And as I kept walking, I felt a hand on my shoulder. And I turned around and I saw this patient that I had treated in the hospital about a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, when I was on my medicine sub-internship. And I remembered him instantly because he'd been a very troubling case for me. He had come in with some intestinal trouble and had severe, severe abdominal pain. And I remember being in his room late at night with him writhing in pain on the bed and having to tell him that we could not give him any pain medication because it would slow down his intestines and cause his problem to get worse. And I remember him begging me for anything that would help. And I could not give him anything because my team had decided that we couldn't give him anything, and I, being the medical student, obviously couldn't make the decision to give him the pain medicine that he needed. And I was really sort of tortured about this. I felt terrible about this. And I went home. I didn't sleep well that night. I'm sure he didn't sleep well either. But it was a really tough case for me, and I thought for many, many months after that about him. But of course, the way medicine works, you don't see them again. He was discharged from the hospital after a while. I moved on to a different service, and given his conditions, I frankly thought that he'd passed away. Until I saw him on the street, and he said to me, Doc, do you remember me? I remember you, and I'll never forget what you did for me. And, you know, I talked to him a little bit there on Broadway, and he was so grateful for the time I spent with him and for the fact that I listened to him and cared for him. And it's so trite to say this, but it was such a validation of everything that I learned in narrative medicine, everything that I've been skeptical about narrative medicine. He was living proof for me that even for patients who are experiencing deep suffering, listening and caring actually do make a difference.
Inside Stories is an oral narratives project that catalogs the stories of medical students during their journeys through medical school. The podcast is hosted on In Training, the online magazine for medical students. Visit us at in-training.org/inside-stories. Inside Stories is a founding member of Vocalis, the podcast network for medical students. Please listen to our partner podcasts at vocalisnetwork.wix.com/listen.